Everything I know about sheep I learned one summer living on a dairy and sheep farm in Sweden. It was always really nice to be able to look out at the field where the sheep were grazing. They were always so peaceful. And I did actually get to know them up and personal. Not great, but anyway, I got to go out and pet them. Much to my chagrin, I discovered they weren't really soft and puffy after all. And if I'd really thought about it, I should have figured that out. Nevertheless, I also learned that they're not always really as stupid as people like to think, because all we had to do was come near the gate to the pasture, and they knew we were there, and they knew we would have treats. And we used to break off little pieces, knackebröd, the little flatbread that the Swedes eat, and we would give that to these sheep, and I learned much, again to my chagrin, that they're a little heavy, because they would leap up if you held your cracker too far up into the air, and then when they came down, they came on your feet rather heavily. They did not mean to hurt you, because they are an extremely docile animal, really. Now, some of you may have had experiences with sheep that's not the same as mine, so I'm not speaking in a general kind of way that this is what sheep are really like. This just happens to be what the sheep I met were like on that particular summer. But anyway, they had all of their needs provided. They were well taken care of. They were always safely in this fenced pasture. They had no predators to threaten them. And they really were a delightful animal to be around. And even though I was living on a dairy and sheep farm, we rarely ate meat. I do not remember ever eating sheep on that farm. And very rarely did we eat beef of any size, shape, or form. Maybe the little footballer, the little meatballs. But that's about the only meat I remember eating that entire summer. And that told me something. Those animals, those sheep, were of great value. That dairy herd was of great value. And I believe that takes us a little closer back to where the biblical shepherd might have been. Because that herd was very important to them. It was their livelihood. And when the sheep shearing was done, that animal's wool is what they could trade for the things that they did not otherwise have. On the farm where I lived, we had some of it come back in the form of yarn, and we made sweaters. All of the girls in the family knit, I crocheted, and we made things, apparel. It was an integral part of our lives. This wool from this sheep came back to us to provide for our benefit, our welfare, our warmth. And boy, on those cool summer days in Sweden, was I ever glad to have that wool sweater. The sheep were totally dependent on their human owners, their human providers. Just as they are in Psalm 23, totally dependent. Now, in times of the shepherd in Psalm 23, there would have been natural predators out there. And when it says in the psalm, my rod and my staff, they provide a lot of comfort, because when that wolf comes along, the shepherd has this big long stick that he can beat the wolf away and protect the sheep. He would carry a long rod, and that would help make sure the sheep stayed in line where they wanted them to be. Keep them on the paths where they're not going to go falling off a cliff. Keep them in the place where they'll be safe at night. So that at night they didn't have a nice little fenced-in pasture. They would have to find a place where there would be rocky walls naturally coming out and they could get the sheep into that area, and they only had one end, hopefully, to have to guard against the predators or anybody who might come along during the night and threaten the flock. So these beautiful, pretty placid animals, very dependent upon a good shepherd. So when the psalm opens up and it says, "The Lord is my shepherd," it is saying, I am totally, utterly dependent upon God for everything in my life. Absolutely everything. And then the psalmist walks us through in the next verses how God does provide the food, the water, the resting place. And when it says, and I'm afraid I'll mess up, I learned it in King James Version. It was read in the NRSV, and I've written yet another version over here. So it's going to be confusing, so I hope I don't mix you up. But when it says, you restoreth my soul, or he restores my soul in the NRSV, we're talking about something just really incredible here. This is not just life and food and water. This is really the very, very essence of life. Soul is not a good translation, but there's no way to translate this Hebrew word, nephesh. Nephesh is the very, very essence of what life is. It is our very breath. It is our very being. It is what God gave human beings at the time of creation, breath to give them life. It is the spirit that makes you who you are. It is the wholeness, the completeness of what makes each of us who we are as individuals. So this is a psalm not about how it's used so often at funerals. It's a psalm about how we live. That our very life, our very being, our very origin, even back as far as the womb, is dependent upon God, the shepherd. And I know we read this psalm over and over again, and how dare I try to preach about it? How can I bring anything new, because we've read it and memorized it and everything for years, all our lives? But when it says that God does this for his name's sake, what in the world does that mean? Why is God doing this? For God's own ego? No, what this really means in the Hebrew is that God is doing this for God's honor. Because it is a part of God's character that God must do this. Because this is who God is. God is our caregiver, our provider. And it would not be God to do anything less. And so we rely upon God to do this. And even though we walk through those dark valleys, and in some translations it is the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. But the Hebrew word is really more akin to, even though I have a calamity. Who of us has not had at least one calamity in our lives? There are those times in everybody's lives when it seems like there's just too much. Maybe it's one thing. But I don't know about you, but it always seems to happen in threes for me. I get sick. One of the kids gets sick and the car dies. You know? So you can't even get to the doctor. All these things pile up on us. or there really is a calamity. Our house is hit by a tornado, or we're in the path of the hurricane, or there's a fire, or we're in an accident, or we have a terminal illness, or it goes on and on. But this God who is our shepherd is there to make sure we get through the calamities of life. So it's not just our daily bread God makes sure we get. It's that we have God's presence with us whenever things look dark or frustrating or just plain old aggravating. God is with us. And so we can feel safe. And I'm not sure who the enemies are for us. It could be the little devil that's on our shoulder tempting us to do bad things. I don't know that I believe in that little devil up here. But nevertheless, we do have various things that confront us that make life difficult for us. And when those things happen, it's like God helps us thumb our nose at them, because God sits us down and gives us a six-course dinner right in front of our enemies. And we can sit there and just eat away. Feast on God's presence and God's love in the face of all of this trouble. And when it writes or says in here, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me. That's my favorite Hebrew word of all times, chesed. Chesed. Oh, our English is so inadequate. It is so inadequate, because this is the God of steadfast love, whose love never fails, whose love never quits, and it doesn't matter what you do, how you fail, how you mess up, God is still there loving. God was there loving before we were ever conceived. God was there the moment we were born. God's been there every step of the way, even when we thought we were so great we could do it all alone. God was there. And that little word, chesed, that's God's love that is so broad, so deep, so high, we don't have a single English word that can possibly convey it. And it's frequently translated steadfast love, but even that doesn't get it. So this is a psalm about living in confidence that God is with us. Every single step, with every single breath, God is there. That's what a shepherd does. Providing, protecting, loving, sharing, all of these things. And I'm thinking about all of this wonderful, wonderful stuff about shepherds, and I look up on my shelf, and there's a book that says The Temporary Shepherd. It's a book about being a transitional pastor. Shepherd, huh? Right. I want to blow that image to a million tiny pieces. I'm not going to compete with God. There is only one shepherd, and that is God. God, our creator, only shepherd. And I don't know if you figured it out yet or not, but ministers, whether you call them pastors, ministers, whatever, can do a great job without your help of putting all kinds of responsibilities on their own shoulders. Like if they don't do it, this church just might fall apart. And it's an easy thing for pastors to do, and they need you to remind them. You are the church. In the interim study report for this congregation, it's very clearly stated that you are a ministry-centered church, not minister-centered. And that's wonderful. But it doesn't happen without the ministers. And they still get a lot of responsibility. You're accustomed to having a full time and a half pastor. You now have one and a third. Oh, well, that's not that much less. Let me tell you. Let Andrew tell you. It's a lot less. It's a lot less. And so you have to be mindful of your pastors because they don't always take real good care of themselves. They need to take that time apart that says, I have needs also. I have a family. Mine may be in Pakistan, but I still have a family. I actually have a son living with me now. So we have our own personal demands as well. And in every single church that I have served up until now, there seemed to be a great unconsciousness that I actually had needs as well. So the ministers need to be encouraged to stay within the guidelines of their job description, and yes, they have them. The personnel committee very carefully wrote them out. And that's to help them, as well as the congregation, keep in mind what is it exactly we can expect of this pastor and this pastor. We're in the process of searching for the new pastor to call to be the co-pastor. That pastor will be full-time. That doesn't mean 60 hours a week. It doesn't even really mean 50 hours a week. The guidelines for the Presbytery of Southern New England says that's 12 units of 3.5 hours or less. You multiply it. And so even though you have been blessed with these highly energetic pastors who will just knock themselves out for you, remember that even those pastors have to take time for themselves. And when the new pastor is called, Pastor Chris goes back to half time. She's not going to have to be everywhere doing everything, she hopes. She is an intentional part-time pastor. I'm an intentional transitional pastor. We have very specific kinds of callings. And so I invite you to take good care of your pastors and don't think of them as shepherds. The pastor who did the installation service for Chris, Steve Clark, said that pastors are more like sheepdogs. I love that image. I love it. We can be loving, we can be affectionate, we can do some things really, really well, and there are some things, and sometimes our tails wag and knock the things off the table. You know, we just totally blow it. There is only one shepherd, and that is God. And the good shepherd Jesus may have laid down his life for the sheep, but that is not the calling of pastors. Trust me, I tried it. It's not any fun. Jesus was working with God in that whole process where he came to this world and lived and worked and ministered and healed, touched people's lives, turned the whole world upside down and made it a different place. But pastors are just plain old flesh and blood folks. And so follow the good shepherd, Jesus. Good being the model of everything that is morally right and good and strong and the very, 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 very absolute supreme best that anybody could ever hope to be, which we will never achieve. Follow that shepherd. And in the meantime, if you need somebody flesh and blood to hold your hand and talk to, you can go to your pastor. But remember, they are human flesh blood pastors who sometimes need some help. May God bless this congregation and in all your work with your pastors, whoever they may be.